Hello, this is Daryl War. This is similar to the September update, and I am super excited because 17 is almost done. I hate making you wait around. Although, from what I know now, especially with pen pals, some of you like to just hear me talking and being cheerful, and so it is almost like radio in that way. That's really fulfilling to know. Everything was so sketchy, and it still is in a lot of ways very sketchy. You feel like people are hovering around you, and you go, oh, wow. With that kind of thing, I start to think about how Jonathan Frid, who played Barnabas Collins, how he liked his privacy. And I start to go, yeah, I can see why, having all these people flocking around you. And also, as Lisa tells me, when people would approach him, he wanted to talk about them. He wanted them to talk about themselves. So I think, gosh, wow, what a guy. And it's funny too, just Barnabas alone, Jonathan Frid. So many people fangirl and gaga and fanboy and all that stuff. The only reason I would have is he was Canadian. That's it. I get gaga over Canadian. Or at least I used to. It's not nearly the way it was because I was learning so much. I even bought a new history book, which is potentially perfect for what was going on in the 40s with Lily and Elizabeth's previous trip that this new one is based on. Because the history book about Canada that we found at a thrift store, the publication date, which was renewed, is between 47 and 68 or 69. And I'm like, oh, well, this is perfect. Plus, the cover's beautiful. McGinnis is the author, and it's big, and it's nonfiction, so I can pay attention to it. And they were still calling it the Dominion. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. So I geek out about Canada. And of course, one of the reasons that I geek out about that kind of thing is because people wouldn't talk. Just like anything else. I get interested. Why ain't anybody saying anything? And you got a lot of Yankees who are like, eh, they're just like us, so you don't worry about them. No, they're not. There's a border, and there's a reason there is a border, and I want to know what the reason the border is. But yeah, that's with Jonathan Frid, that kind of thing. The only fangirl way that I get about him is that he was Canadian, so that's about it. And I just get fascinated. Like some people get fascinated, oh, they're British, which I'm sure causes a lot of fun as well as some harm in a number of cases. Anyway, I am at that second microphone again and in that other room. And I wanted to just do some chit chat. So 17, I was test listening so much I'd get burned out. I gotta do something else. I'm like pit burnout. But don't worry because 18 haunts me. I want to know what's going to happen. I'm very much like anyone else who's interested. I want to know what's going to come next. That's the great thing with it being a humor mystery serial is that you're waiting for the next step. But there is a goal, and I've talked about the goal before, and that's what's nice is having a goal, just cutting it off a certain place. I remember somebody asked me, why can't the pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows go on endlessly? I'm like, because I'm gonna die someday. How about that for an answer? I mean, I want my other life back, but the pit actually helped to improve a lot in my life. I mean, it's caused a great deal of disaster sharing it with people and trying to find out what they enjoyed. But that also has to do with the way the technology has changed us and in very bad ways with the clicks, with the putting our social life on a conveyor belt. And then you don't even get the news of how everyone is because they want to throw a quiz at you or post some article that you're not going to read, and heaven knows they probably didn't. Or get all angry about entertainment when entertainment being a choice, a great deal of it was meant. You get home from a hard day at work and you want something fun to relax with and just be entertained. Get away from the problems. And it becomes all this politicized stuff with fandoms. And I'm like, that's why I get so angry and so many of the rants happen. And that's why people have approached me and said, I love your rants. It shows that you're human because this is ridiculous. All the trouble is ridiculous. And it was just so good to get some people saying that. One of the horrible things is that this is a kind of problem with the smartphones and with the social networking. It's likely all here to stay, but people are seeing the effects and raising the kids on that kind of thing. There is more human trafficking going on because of all this, because kids have been raised on a system that is way too easy, that does not challenge them. And I'm not saying everybody has to be challenged in things that don't interest them, but it's causing a lot of problems, and it's been for years, and people just complain, and usually complain on social media, that by sheltering a lot of these kids who are now in their 20s, we have made very helpless adults out of them. They haven't had a lot of the life experiences that we did, and we are damaged by quite a few of those experiences, but they did teach us how to keep out of harm's way in a lot of cases, because that memory is very strong when you've been in harm's way. It's scary. That makes me feel quite a bit better about what I'm doing, and that I was whistleblowing it, and that I have said since 2013, there is a problem. First, I was very, very mad. Like, what is going on? I mean, it was just shocking. Shocking to have that many scripts out there and that many readers of the script and nobody's saying anything. And as I look over the years, it is very clear to me how helpless everybody become inarticulate to something that was very natural 5 to 10 years ago. Even one great teenager, I don't know if she's still in her teens, sent me a marvelous set of comments for episode 2. A year or two later, we tried to email again, and all she said was, "Hey, what's up?" And that was it. The articulation of correspondence was gone and didn't take long. And I worry about her, but there's only so much I can do. That's a really big problem. Plus, with Mission Log, the one with Marina Sirtis, and even the one with Will Wheaton, I highly recommend both of them, those podcasts, they were seeing it years ago. Those podcasts are not brand new, and they were seeing a lot of crazy problems. Will Wheaton really touched me because he has his tabletop game show, just where people are playing board and card games, something on a tabletop, and testing them with friends. And we watched a little bit of it. I don't know if he's still doing it. Online show, and it was a lot of fun. Never got into any of the games, though, unfortunately. That's bad, but they were not really the style that we like. We like classic stuff and cheap-ass games and that kind of thing. Fairly simple stuff. But with Will Wheaton's interview, he was pointing out that he went to some forums, like some geek forums, to find out possibly what people thought of his program. And it was name-calling, a lot of name-calling to Will Wheaton. I think one of them was like Fake Geek Girl, something like that. And his reaction wasn't so much being offended as just, this is really weird. Because these people are picking this stuff out of their own volition and complaining about it. And I'm like, wow, yeah. And that also provides me with some insight of, okay, MST 3000, MST3K, Mystery Science Theater 3000, did not mean all the time. Sometimes they do say a few mean things, but it's a situation where a guy is with two robots heckling films that mad scientists are making them watch. So it's different than us pulling something out and going, oh my gosh. You know. So the situation of Mystery Science Theater 3000 is set that it is against the participants' will. So that in order to get through it, they go and they heckle things. But even just pointing out funny things, I remember there was some drum beats in one of the films and just randomly saying Neil Peart on drums. And so it was just sort of silly little things. But you catch the references and you associate them with something that you might know. And it gives you a giggle. So with Mystery Science Theater 3000, it's a very different format. But something picked up from the heckling format. I know Helena and I have both watched Nostalgia Critic, and I've watched Nostalgia Chick a little bit more because she gets a little more geeky. There are things that she likes and she talks about them. Then, even before that, just critics in general, it just set a tone. Monkey see, monkey do. Everybody's trying to follow suit. There was somebody who liked one of the chapters of the novel, and what I read from her review, I didn't post it because I couldn't use it. There was too much negative. It was the kind of thing where it felt like she was pressed to need to be a critic. That's not good to encourage people. Critical thinking is better for real life situations, but having everybody coming down on entertainment that's supposed to be escape from your real life problems a lot of the time. It's just bad news, and it makes everybody feel bad, and why bother sharing anything? But that is what has happened. Monkey see, monkey do, in order to be popular. I got to diss on stuff, make myself look cool. And that's why I just go, well, I would rather listen to filmmakers discuss movies. People who actually do a lot of those jobs. Because they're more in the know. Not people who just sit on their duff and stick their thumbs up or down and all. Just, awful. And it used to drive me and my mother crazy. Watching Siskel and Ebert, wanting to see what new films were coming up. They were the show in the 80s. Yeah, and those thumbs, it drive me nuts. And they're all over the place now, and I really want them to go away. But yeah, it would drive us nuts. Because why do we care about these people's opinions? Like, if they're not our opinions, we want to pick for ourselves. And then finally, the E! Channel showed up. Just a bunch of ads saying, what the film's about, that's all we want. That's all we want. Everything was better. Well, see if we're interested in what the story is, or an actor that we appreciate. Yes, I am excited about 17 being almost finished, and also being haunted by 18. I'm, like I said, I'm feeling the burnout. Ugh, I don't want Tess listen anymore, so I need to do something else. Like make a podcast. Another update. And also, a lot of listeners who, especially ones I'm in touch with, do understand that it's been a healing year, and that's why there's so many more updates anyway. You know, I've had a lot of pressure, a lot of bad things happening in the last, consequently, 4 years. Isn't it interesting that it's been 4 years? That's the same time period that people usually get through high school. And a lot of this stuff has been very high school. Awful. And I'd be very embarrassed for people who are older than me. Like, ugh, I went back there. I did that. And I got into it too, but there was nothing left. Everybody was on this thing and it became mandatory. And it's one of those things that if anybody, old friends that I haven't heard from in ages, the people I do hear from, less activity ever through social media, how our friendships had been previously. But anyone else, I really don't know how, if you want to step up to the plate, because it's getting old for quite a few people. For some, it'll never get old. The social networking stuff. But there's a lot of pen pal profiles on various sites that I've seen where they're getting burned out on social networking. It's not the one-to-one touch and it's become very empty. So with other people who have had their friendships and social lives with loved ones shattered by this thing without really realizing that part of it was their constant usage of it, as addicting as it is. There's only so many times you can blame the product. But yeah, then it becomes, you know, just trying to find a way out. That's why people say, my anti-drug is this. And that would definitely be, for me, I hate the term, but for me, it would be letter writing. That's a very healthy thing to do, correspondence, because you journal your own life events with another person, so that's socializing. And in doing that, when you receive their letter and you let it take a while, their responses remind you of the recent past. So it's very healthy. And also people who want to learn writing or improve their writing skills, it works for that too very well. You're making observations about your daily life. And there's so many letters that I've written. And that was why I started that weblog. When I look back, I couldn't get letters from old pen friends. I didn't know where else to go. So I was trying to patiently wait for the chat to come. You know, false promises and all that. And I just kept writing. I had to. There was almost no pen friends left to write to. That's a lot of why the WordPress log entries are so numerous. I had to write it out. And it was good too, because then I realized I could use it as a tool and put tags on it for the novel, because people did really want that novel. And I'll talk about that later. That's why a lot of that's there. So while everybody's judging me and likely gossiping up the wazoo when you could have just said what the heck joke made you laugh, I was making observations about all these people I was socializing with, and I was just seeing all of these patterns, and it was really scary. It was really scary to see into stuff people got, and especially that voting poll who Barnabas Collins should love or have ended up with, and I'm like, oh, Lord, we've talked about it, me and Melissa and Lisa, you know, as soon as you start voting for who fictional characters should love, that's like just a few steps away from doing it to real people, which is bad news. Bad news. And like I said, it was easy for me. You know, I was looking at Dr. Julie Hoffman and, well, Professor Stokes. And then as time went on and I got in touch with more fans, yeah, Stokes was interested. And that was where it was naturally going. And really kind of scary, too, because originally Milligan, Sir Simon Milligan, when it was farcical, was going to get Angeline because he's hot for her. It makes a lot of sense that he would be. But as we were creeping closer on Dark Shadows for Quentin, and I was getting to know him, I was like, you know, his behavior, you know, that would kind of work with Angeline's, and it would be fiery. And it would be like very Klingon style. In fact, I started to write a little erotica for them and I got really scared and I had to just put it away somewhere. So, you know, like love scenes with them. So it just was too, like I said, too Klingon, too violent. But it was scary because we were watching the 1897 era and here comes Angeline. I'm like, oh, great. And it felt a little like part of it was just like, all right, I'll humor her and tell her I will marry her. Just humor her. That's what I remember. And it might not have gone down that way. But then Quentin makes the first move. And I had seen something ahead of time because we were still trying to get the disc. She wanted him. She Angeline wanted Quentin. I'm like, holy moly. But then when we're watching just regular, because I think when she wanted him, it was like a YouTube video or something that was briefly up. Just looking around for what's coming up next. And so I'm like, whoa, okay, there's a point at which she's interested in somebody other than Barnabas, and this is a good thing. It's a really good thing. Then it was shocking because earlier on, 1897, he's slithering up to her and all sexy, you know. And saying, you have to forget about that other guy. You're thinking about me. Like, wow. We had to turn it back. I said, you turn that back. I got to see that again because it was his personality that I felt was going to match Angelique's. But then they were going for each other. And then there was other stuff. And Lisa's assured me, well, one of the reasons, other than it being a daytime drama and a soap opera and everything running around like crazy, that Angelique and Quentin did not get together was because of this other love interest that ultimately was not a real person. And with Lisa, she's got a great gal, original character up for Quentin, and it's very sweet. I enjoy it a great deal in her work. But for a release series that has interrupted earlier, because she interrupts later in the series, I'm interrupting earlier and obviously throwing in a gaggle of pals. But then she's also rewatched the 1795 stuff and going, I don't know how you're going to redeem this woman. And I'm like, well, you know, time does go on. And Oisin also says, you know, somewhere down the line, Angelique has gone away from her obsession with Barnabas and has matured and grown. I'm like, well, then the potential is there. Potential is somehow there. But coming in earlier, and also with the pit, you can see that there are these steps. Nicholas Blair is continually stumbling, and just like 15, I mean, it's called a blundering succubus. She's tripping over her own feet a lot of the time. You know, people are just getting in the way. Everybody's cutting things off at the pass. No, you're not gonna. No. As that goes on, Angelique's dialogue becomes more thoughtful. Maybe it shouldn't all be about me. These things used to work. When before she kills Tom off in episode 15, she is thinking. When he steps up to her, she is thinking that something's thwarting her, something's changing. And because of that, maybe she needs to really assess her purpose, which is the direction I never was sure I could go, but it just started to come very naturally with her. Because at first, the bad guys are upset. And Angelique, I mean, that's why I say there's no saving Jason McGuire. Nicholas Blair, I really don't know. That's why I say maybe something comical with how he turns out. But with Angelique, yeah, it's loneliness. It's loneliness. It's not understanding what love is, but desperately wanting it. With Barnabas, he's so caring. Even if it was one night stand or multiple one night stands, those nights in Martinique, it would probably be very unusual for her to have had love from somebody like him, even if it didn't mean anything long term to him. And once you get a little piece of that, you gotta have more. And Angelique's method of getting more is very destructive. So, a villain for a soap opera, but with a little seed of things could improve. Whereas with Jason Maguire, I really appreciate O'Sheen calling him the vile Maguire. Vile. Because he really is. And out for himself. And avarice, too. That's a lot of what Jason was about. Whereas with Angelique, deep down, she's after love. She's looking for love. And she doesn't understand how it works. But also being quite self-absorbed, just like Quentin, somehow, well, I could see it. I could see it. Even though with the marriage novel, and I'll talk about that now, with the marriage novel, I could just do it slightly because I haven't been watching a lot of Quentin or Angelique too much. Yeah, with the marriage novel, there's still plans. I know there's the unhappy author's note at the end, but I'm just waiting. I'm waiting to get some chit-chat enough to return it. And a couple of people did get it by postal mail, which I was happy about. I was like, oh, I mean, if the internet's going to be busted, then I'm going to go back to square one. Yeah, I could put the chapter back. I just need to start getting the chat again. And it is. It's very important to get the chat. The second draft was a great improvement on the first draft because I was just running around like a chicken with my head cut off looking for help, you know. And then I got the help, thankfully. That's one of the reasons that the reviews are so plentiful, because people have been waiting for that marriage. They've been waiting for the story of that marriage. And they don't care if it's multi-fandom, because it is. You know, got Wadsworth and Little Ghost of Vince Vermeer in there. I mean, you had a lot of fans of the couple itself starving for this story for years, and in some cases, decades. Lisa saw chapter one, and I said, you know, I saw it in text, but I felt like I could hear your voice saying, I loved it. And she's all, that was what I was saying behind the screen. I loved it. And thankfully, the erotica itself is very different. It is without vulgar word usage. And I hope that people who enjoy it, that's also maybe taught them a higher level, higher grade of reading material. I believe how Barnabas is writing most of it and how he would express it if he was so happy. And everybody else, yeah. And then Sam just suddenly had a ton of stuff he wanted to say, which was good. Just getting back into his role and showing, yeah, Sam continues. Sam Evans and Andre Dupre continue. And there's a lot of really deep thoughts that it healed a lot of problems that we were having because the couple was starving for each other for so long. It's funny, too, because there's a lot of dissing of Josette Dupre. It's jealousy. That could be one factor of it, or just that need to just diss. And she's really complicated. Josette is very complicated. And it's easier to be dismissive of somebody who's very complicated, which is not a good habit to get into. Because as they formulated her character originally, she was a ghost helping people out, which was great to watch with some of the Laura stuff. Even though in the film, you know, the new one, new-ish, film, they just had Maggie / Victoria side by side with her own spirits, that it was this part emanating. That was a really interesting move. With the original program, when I consulted O'Sheen about this, that it could definitely be Maggie, because when Josette's ghost comes around, Maggie's not in the picture. They didn't have, you know, the Parent Trap special effects to be able to do that anyway. So it could be Maggie was sleeping, or as near to being asleep as makes no difference. So there's that movement. The spirit of Josette moves out of her astral projection. And that helped a lot because I was trying to get from other fans of the character, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? It was just difficult to think about because there was so much stress and so much online drama going on. Just trying to get a good talk with people. But it helped a lot. And I really am very proud of the chapter, The Lady in White. A great deal of it is based on episode 70 of Dark Shadows, and it had a lot of Poe. And I realized that when I went to Lolita for the richness, I looked and I realized, you know, one of the reasons this works is because a lot of what the antihero is going through is, you know, it's Edgar Allan Poe. There's a lot of kind of quotations from Edgar Allan Poe. I'm like, oh, that's why. So I started going back to Edgar Allan Poe, which is wonderful for Barnabas. Wonderful for Barnabas. But you flip it around. So it's got the richness and the romance. But the romance is not a lost romance. It's a found romance. It's a renewed one. And all that time. Marvelous. And I had somebody ask how the novel was going to end. Now, I put that in the March update for 2017, but I guess it would be good to go through again here. Since the rebirth of Sarah, it's going back and forth. It's a little similar to if you've read Kenneth Graham's Wind in the Willows. A lot of times, not every time, but a lot of times, there is a toad getting in trouble chapter and then a nice, sweet mole and ratty hanging out chapter. And of course, maybe I used to like the toad ones, but now I'm more preferable to the calm ones, just about the riverbankers hanging out. So with the novel, it becomes more like that when a child enters. It's like, okay, so we'll have a nice family one that doesn't have any kind of lovey-dovey stuff that a lot of the readers enjoy. Just the pattern of her life, right? Reaching her to college age, getting her through the steps, maybe 1 to 3 years per chapter. This is what's going on in the reborn Sarah's life. And reaching her to about 20 years old, which would get us to the year 1995, and that would be 200 years after 1795. And it comes together that way. And of course, I want to have a third draft. I do definitely want to have a third draft because I do want it in print somehow, some way, whether I can make any kind of profit. I don't think that I can, but the same as, the Zinesters have done for years with a lot of fan fiction before it went, a lot of it went online. Because they're so in touch with being in love and what it means to keep on renewing it all the time. And I think that's very helpful because it's very different. And staring at a screen isn't all that good for you. And I've gone through a lot of steps anyway of seeing how to get books in print. And there's still plenty of books in print and not a whole tons and tons of bookstores like we used to have, but it's still gone around. And it's nice to see when people talk about reading a book. Yeah, I want to hear what you have to say about what you're reading that's on paper. I've already gone through previous steps because I think that's also been a problem with what I'm seeing. It's like, well, I can be an instant artist just using the internet. Well, it's all unfiltered. So you're seeing numbers, but it ain't money. And on top of that, you don't know what anybody's thinking about it. You don't know who is reading it. I mean, gets sketchy, feels sketchy having a lot of strangers who can't talk hovering around what you're putting your heart out in. And then also raising the kids to behave the same way. So, but anyway, with the novel, yeah, it does come. I get a little urge. Barnabas. Oh, and every time I think, well, aren't we going to talk about what's going on at home with people getting older and whatever? And there was a little bit of that happening. But yeah, I get into Barnabas mode. I mean, he just, it's always, I'm so in love. Okay. And it's good. See, you don't have to just read it in one go. I wouldn't read anything in one go. I mean, it's been rare. There's been a few times that I've done it. I can't calm the guy down. I just can't calm him down. He's always so delighted with Maggie as Josette and Kitty and all that. So wonderful. You just can't get away from it. I'm trying to get more into Maggie's role. It's really difficult just as I'm not in love with Barnabas Collins. And also merging the three characters into one and to stretch through so much time. Yeah, she becomes quite calm, quite wise. A different Maggie than we're used to seeing because a lot of times she's flustered on the original show and trying to figure out who she is and oh dear, why this, why that. The humor is really good with Maggie though, and that would ground her and having Sam around too. So yeah, it's just stages, just going through stages. But yeah, every time I put myself into Barnabas's shoes to try and write something, or sometimes I just become suddenly inspired. It's like I said in Autumn's interview, just using cursive because you got to go so fast because he won't stop talking about her, which he loves. And I think that's good for people to see someone be appreciated because actually, one of my pen pals, and this is neat too, I really appreciate this. There's quite a few people that I am discovering through pen paling that are happily married or happily taken. And it's like I never knew that there were so many. I figured there had to have been because otherwise things wouldn't roll very steadily, but. And one recently that I mentioned in the June update, and she's like, "Ooh, I get to use my brain." She's saying, "Oh, so nice to be friends with you because I'm happily married, you're happily married or taken or whatever, and you don't have all this drama in your life with your relationships. You're not in an abusive relationship, not having these problems, and it's just so refreshing." And yeah, that's what we want. It's the goal we strive for. But being surrounded by so much storytelling in media that is about conflict Monkey see, monkey do. If there ain't drama in my relationship, then it's not successful. People actually do get that idea. I had it once upon a time. And that's why, to me, slice of life was very important, just to see the other side, have something relaxing. There's a lot of choice, but then you just learn to whittle down what's good for me, what will make me feel better, not peer pressure. And a lot of the critiquing was born, I'd said about the other things, but a lot of the critiquing was born because a great deal of people got sick of constant advertising for blockbuster movies and things that are lowest common denominator that doesn't, it's not at the level that they're at. But then they constantly get advertised and then people are like shoving it at you. Go see Forrest Gump, go see Titanic, you know, not horrible films at all, but those are the big ones that I can think of. Was there one, a tornado or Twister? Then nobody said tornado anymore. Everybody kept saying a twister, kept calling it a twister constantly. Yeah, Twister's probably the better one to mention in this avenue. Well, if somebody's not interested, why push it at them? That's why I've always, with this, I said in an intro too, if somebody is bothering you to say, listen to the pit, because it's the best thing ever, and they're peer pressuring you, you come to me and tell me who's bothering you, and I will tell them to stop, because I don't believe in that kind of thing. That was the point. But with the quote-unquote critiquing and critics and dissonant stuff, a lot of that was born out of people getting tired of constantly being bombarded through TV media or whatever and billboards to go see a film they had no interest in. So then you find out, yeah, this is a story that would not interest me, and that's a lower level than, you know, it insults their intelligence. But unfortunately, as a result, a lot of people hopped on the critic bandwagon and everybody became a critic. And there was this peer pressure to be critical, judgmental. At this point, you got a whole lot of choice. You don't have to choose what mainstream media chooses for you. It's not the point. And that's where that came out of. But that now it's like, well, everything's bad and we're going to bash at all of it. And then it doesn't become escapism. It becomes politicized. It's like everybody's got to have a negative opinion. Is that really how you want to live your life? You know, what happened to life, liberty, this pursuit of happiness? Just the pursuit of happiness at all. And understanding what it means. That no, you can't be happy all the time. There's things like weather, and previously stated, you know, a flat tire. Problems that we are here to help each other out with. Solving things. There are actual stories out there. Not tons and tons, but there are stories out there that I enjoy. There's no villain. There's no villain at all. Yeah, there are stories where there might be an occasional villain wandering through town that, you know, is selling snake oil or something like that. But with a lot of the stories that I prefer, there isn't any villain. There's some danger, because naturally there is danger. But you don't have to go around courting conflict because it's more interesting than happiness. Happiness can be very interesting. And that's the thing, going back to the novel, that's what that's proven. That it could be just as complex and rich if you're happy. There will always be small problems or even some big ones. So needing to liven things up with conflict is not always necessary. For me, I prefer not a lot of conflict anyway, just observations of life. You know, there's a lot of really great friendships that I've been formulating this year with pen pals, and they catch up. Some people are not through all of the audio drama, but quite a few are excited. Actually, this was wonderful news. Very recently, a lady from Germany contacted me. She was interested in the radio show, but she's also interested in improving her English. And I think sometimes she was using a translator to read what I wrote or spell out what she wanted to say. And I said, like in a previous podcast, I said that if you were doing this to try and learn English, you're going to have more benefits than a great deal of native speakers now, because they only understand chat speak. And she actually told me, yeah, that's a problem in Germany too. I'm like, oh man. Yeah. Everywhere. Or like the theme park guy, if you go to his website, the theme park where everybody's hanging on to their smartphones 7 years after they had been very engaged, that was China. Like, it's everywhere. This problem is everywhere. It's really scary, and it's really sad that I couldn't do something fun and spooky for October. Would have been nice to do something fun and spooky for October, because, you know, Halloween and all that. But now we've got some real life scares. The enemy is us, and having quite unnatural attachments to stuff that's bad for us starts out as a tool, and then it becomes a demon that you can't control. It's frightful. So that is, I guess, the big scare for the October update. Really does bother me. And I'm a lot out of it. Sometimes I will. When I say fall off the wagon, I'm talking about going to Facebook when I shouldn't, or posting on Facebook when I need to stay within the 3 week mark. But yeah, I am treating this like an addiction problem, for sure. My relationship with Facebook and some of the other social media. I am treating it exactly like that because it's the only way that I can handle it. It's the only way that I can maintain any kind of sanity in using it at all. So yeah, that's big, bigger than any other addiction I have ever had. And it exacerbated the alcoholism. It's increased it, so. But yeah, it's not better. It's much better than it was. Just hoping to get back on an even keel here and start having fun with this thing again. And it's really helpful to get some of the news from pen friends. Like, well, yeah, this is great because you're trying to work things out with everybody, so nobody's losing. And one listener said, yeah, sometimes it gets very distasteful because people are making a social justice thing out of fictional characters' lives. And I'm like, no, it's crazy because we do want to help each other, but now it's just gotten nasty. You're raising the kids online, a lot of that nasty. It's like, oh, my goodness. And another nice thing, though, felt good, felt so good. And it's a little bit of a diss, but it's one of those natural, you're just laying around and you don't really mean anything bad by it. But yeah, I was watching some late 500s Dark Shadows because I was binge watching Atoms. Just binge. I was like, okay, I think I'm getting used to this. I think I'm getting used to this. It was a lot of fun. I'm like, I need something different. So I grabbed some Dark Shadows, the late 500s in number of their episodes, and they were building Eve. And putting Eve together, and everybody's having to freak out. So it's nice to see Peter and Victoria. I never call him Jeff. I always call him Peter. And a little something that Roger, had offered a job and that kind of thing. And I was, oh, that's nice. That's a quiet moment for a sliver of time. But yeah, the building of Eve, this is why I skipped that, just sent Adam away, just to get it out of the way so that stuff doesn't occur. Just do that a little sooner and send him off somewhere. I was watching it and they're trying to, they get everybody for the life force, and I'm still blown away by this life force thing. I guess they didn't want to totally rip off Mary Shelley and use a lightning rod, get electricity or whatever. But yeah, the life force, I'm still lost on that. But yeah, they get one girl after another girl after another girl to do it, to try. And most of these episodes, day after day, episode after episode for the show, it's Dr. Hoffman and Barnabas staring at the clock. Just staring open that the experiment works. I'm like, I'm watching it. Oh my gosh, what do the housewives do? They just sit on the other edge of your seat every day? And I guess the kids did too. Like, we're watching two people watch a clock very, very often. It's just the seconds going by, the minutes going by. Like, and I finally said, this show is so dumb. So just for that, so you're staring at people staring at a clock. Hey, Quaverton's bad enough, but at least Quaverton has character. They're in the basement. Julie's got the generator going, so just put all this stuff together, and you're just staring at the clock on the cement wall. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the dull looking clock to be staring at. And I named Quaverton Quaverton just for the pit, but yeah, Quaverton's got a lot more character. You stare at that grandfather clock, and it's much more interesting. So yeah, for that I just I didn't call it dumb just because I was getting tired of watching two people watch a clock. But it is, but I do love it. Like I said to Lisa in Lisa's interview, I prefer Dark Shadows over Harry Potter, and I do I prefer it. So yeah, I think that's about it. For what it's worth, happy Halloween. Really need any extra of that in my life. It's pretty constant with this show. And keep in touch. Feels great to be in touch with a lot of you now. Really feels good. Feels better and feels sane. Take care.